And welcome back to Coast with our special guest tonight, David Kapilian, his work, How Evil Works. And we'll be back with that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. David, you were onto something important last hour when you were talking about the international left, not whether one is liberal or not. And I'll let you go back to that.
Thanks, George. Well, people often just equate the two. And I used as the example my dad, who, you know, he was an immigrant, he was a genocide survivor, he came here, he became a Democrat. A lot of immigrants identify with the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. He was fairly liberal, but he was like a Jack Kennedy Democrat. He protected this country. My dad was the Army's chief scientist for ballistic missile defense. He was a high-up, genuine scientific genius. He was a rocket scientist.
Yeah.
He loved this country. His whole career was protecting this country. So liberals, true liberals, love America. They may think that, you know, they may want a bigger role for government, safety net. They may have different view on some social issues and so mm-hmm. forth. They love America. The hard international left we're talking about hates America, hates capitalism. They think America is evil. And, you know, I think for all its flaws, America is the greatest nation in the world. So what I was saying was that you asked me what disturbed me, and the more I've you know, about writing this book, and realizing the extent to which while we were distracted, it was like a two-front war. The obvious front where we're worried about thermonuclear war and ABM treaties and stuff with the Soviet Union. Meanwhile, the left is infiltrating, subverting America, taking over a lot of its major institutions, the college. Ever wonder why the colleges are so incredibly left? I mean, you may agree with it, but the fact is they are incredibly to the left of basically, you know, center-right America.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people that are pushing hard for radical redistribution of wealth and power, which will have the effect of taking away America's sovereignty and lead directly to world government, because it's a total leveling of the whole world scene.
Yeah.
It's made possible only by drastically lowering America's standard of living and its security and sovereignty. I don't like that. And that is quite real. And so that's something that people, you know, we've been unaware of it. It's been stealthful and gradual, like termites in the basement.
Whatever happened to the old formula of letting corporations and hardworking people make money as much as they can, be successful, be driving, and then as a nation, be there to help the poor, which we used to do, instead of trying to make this all level?
Listen, it defies logic. It defies reason. I'm talking about the leftist ideology. It's an ideology that's held almost like a religion, in that it's believed in, even though it has never worked as promised anywhere, ever. It defies the laws of economics. It defies the laws of human nature in terms of what motivates people to do things. It's just a belief system that we talk about, you know, the radical Islam. Okay, you go up and blow up the pizza parlor, you go to heaven and you get 72 virgins. Well, it's not true, but if you believe it, it motivates you, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not logical. Why would God want you to kill a bunch of innocent people you've never met before and that would please him? How does this make sense? But from a certain ideology that's bolstered with hatred, because you have to have both. You have to have a lot of rage inside somebody. You don't blow up a piece of parlor if you're not an angry person.
Exactly.
I don't care what the ideology is. If you have the ideology and the hate, you do bad things. Well, this whole international left, look, I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't know what kind of like bad childhood that they had, but something really bad went on, or they were brainwashed in college or somewhere along the way, because this is a philosophy that's based in hatred. You know, Winston Churchill described socialism as, quote, the gospel of envy. There's a dark side to human nature, and there's certain philosophies that really play on those, and that's how they grab their power. And this is one of them. But it doesn't, if you really analyze it from a logical, rational point of view, it doesn't make any sense. What you said makes sense. You know, jobs. Jobs are created by rich people. Jobs are created by successful corporations that take chances and raise capital and hire 100, 1,000, 10,000 people. And this is, you know, we've lost sight of what made America great and made it the breadbasket for the world and the font of the technology and the freedom and everything for generations. We've sort of lost that.
I wonder, David, if any suicide bombers have ever questioned Bin Laden, assuming he's still alive, and said to him, why don't you do this?
I always used to wonder that about Yasser Arafat, you know, the old terrorist there. He's always encouraging. It is the most horrible child abuse in the world to actually get these little children from birth practically. You see the pictures of them 3-4 years old with the assault rifles and the makeup. Encouraging them, setting them up, programming them to be little jihadists. And I have some of it in my book, the songs they sing, you know, when I get older, I will be a suicide bomber in Jerusalem and I will kill people. And these are beautiful little clean scrub kids, little boys and girls on Palestinian TV that are singing these songs about murdering people they've never met before. And so you're right. Why don't these old terrorists, why don't they do it? Why don't they go and get the virgins and get all the glory? Well, maybe they know something.
Well, hey, they're using a chapter out of Hitler's book. They're creating the fear and they're manipulating their own people. And off they go. Yep. You write it in the book, How Evil Works, about the secret curse of celebrity, which I find fascinating because, you know, spending my time between L.A. and St. Louis, on the L.A. side, I see a lot of this, that, you know, a lot of people who have had incredible fame, tremendous talent, often destroy themselves. How come?
Yeah, it's quite an amazing thing. It seems counterintuitive because these are the people that have everything we all covet. They've got talent and fame and wealth, and everybody loves them. And everything that we thought would make us happy, and they get into terrible trouble. You know, George, we all know this expression, power corrupts.
Yeah.
Well, power, you know, doesn't mean just political power. It's social power, fame, influence. It's all a form of power. And fame, for the immature person, because it doesn't have to have this effect on you, okay? But for many, it does. For the immature person, fame is like being drunk on power. And, you know, we get into trouble when we're drunk. Here's what I've come to. I mean, and again, you can look at this from a religious point of view or just from an experiential point of view. But when I say that unless a person is very mature and well-grounded, fame is destructive and corrupting, it's like this. Here's what I see I've come to. Is that the thing that keeps us really, you know, sane and happy and moving along in the right direction in life? It requires a certain constant self-awareness. Okay, I mean, we got to be keeping one eye on ourselves. If we lose awareness of our, you know, if we see a fault, we can make a course correction. Okay, yeah. What happens if we lose awareness of what we're doing? I mean, obviously, we're gonna drive off the cliff. And if we lose awareness of our faults, of the tendency to be, you know, egotistical or greedy or selfish or angry or whatever it is, okay, whatever is like the kind of the dark side of human nature, if we lose awareness of those tendencies, we end up going down the rabbit hole and doing them. And that's what happens when you're drunk or high on drugs or something like that. And I'm saying that for all practical purposes, to soak up fame like this, especially if you look at these young kids that we do this to, like the Britney Spears. I mean, this is real child abuse. You cannot take a little snot-nosed kid who she may be a sweet kid at heart, but has the same, you know, pride and ego and the hang-ups that everybody else does. You cannot go and worship this person and give them millions of dollars and treat them like they're gods. And not destroy them. That's what we do. We destroy people.
It got to all of them. It probably got to Elvis too, didn't it?
Elvis, I was reading in my book, he died in 1977.
Yeah.
The year before he died, one doctor alone, I forget his name, the Greek guy, supposedly prescribed 10,000 hits of drugs for the king. I mean, we were talking about uppers and downers and hormones and sleeping pills and six, seven, eight, nine different types of drugs. And if you divide that out, you know, 10,000 divided by 365, that's like, you know, 25 or 30 hits a day. This guy was like a walking pill. And you say, wait a minute, here's a guy who is worshipped. I mean, still, people, you know, they worship the ground that he walked on 30, 40, 50 years ago. He was like a god. How is it that somebody who is treated like a god can come into so much conflict? Because, you know, why do people take these drugs? We take drugs for pain. I mean, you know, if you have diabetes, that's something else. The kind of drugs we're talking about, the alcohol, the pain pills, they're taking it. I'm not talking so much physical pain. There could be that. Occasionally, that's part of it. Michael Jackson had, you know, back pain, whatever.
Yeah.
But we're talking mostly the psychic pain. Whatever it is, they're in terrible, terrible conflict to have to be, you know, coked up on all these multiple drugs. Heath Ledger, very super talented actor, okay, died a few years ago after playing the Batman movie.
The Joker.
But here's a guy, they found six different drugs in his system. Again, remember, these are people that are handsome, talented, wealthy. They've got everything that would make us secure.
It gets them, by the way, it was Dr. Nick, George Nikolopoulos, I think.
Yes.
Close to that, anyway, with Elvis. But,
yes.
I mean, it happened to Belushi. It happens to all of them. They just take this incredible talent and they blow it. There's a couple people in Hollywood right now that I think should be on the watch list. I'm not going to mention who they are. They're all over TMZ all the time.
Right.
I mean, they're next. They're next if they keep doing this.
And, you know, we make it into this entertainment. We have this celebrity gossip, which we branded as entertainment news, quote unquote. But really is what we're doing is we're taking these people that you know, they sing songs and they act and whatever. And to me, like, these are not – look, don't get me wrong. I admire actors. I know what hard work it is. They work enormously hard. They get up very early and they sit for 4 hours of makeup sometimes. I mean, it's hard work. But really, I have more respect for, like, the soldier over there in Afghanistan who is putting his life down for someone else. Well, who hears about him? But we worship these people. And then when you put somebody on a pedestal and you worship them so greatly and nobody speaks up to them and says, hey, you know, you're being a jerk right now.
Yeah.
Please knock it off. I mean, I'm just not with anger. I'm saying somebody with love who is real with them.
A real friend. Yeah.
And I tell you, these people ache to be treated like a real person.
Well, and see, the problem, David, people like that generally have enablers with them, what I call the latchers on, who aren't real friends. They want a free ride. So they attach themselves to these superstars who are weak, and I mean, they just keep enabling, you know, yeah, go, let's use the drugs, let's do this, let's do that, instead of the real friend who doesn't care about any of that.
Right. George, I used to wonder, I see all these historical movies about, you know, Henry VIII and all these different kings and their families. They say, why is it that the royal families are always like trying to kill each other? There's always some plot. They're poisoning each other or stabbing each other or something. You know, you see, these are people, like, they've got the life of Riley. You know, they've got wealth and they got power and they got everything they could possibly want. Why are they so screwed up? It's really the same thing. Power does something to you. Look, you know, from a religious point of view, then the first commandment says, you know, what is it? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Whether you're religious or not, we human beings do not make very good gods. For whatever reasons it is, when we are worshipped in that way, it's corrupting.
Yeah,
we need people to be real with us because we have problems. We need people who love us to say, as I said, says, I was on the radio the other day, and I was talking to somebody who was a pretty famous person, and she said, you know, my husband always, all these years, he always told me what was wrong with me. And that really helped me. I said, yeah, I have a wife like that. And I appreciate it. It's very valuable to me, because if you're any kind of public person, you have people that, you know, they look up to you and they say what a great job you're doing. And you really cannot take it too seriously. Okay. You got to see yourself as you are, with warts and all. Otherwise, you start to not become real and you lose it.
Well, I agree with that. And part of the problem, too, then is it's a filtering effect where television primarily, David, has magnified this, these superstars, and all of a sudden people try to emulate them and they want to be the same and they act the same. And it's spreading all over the country.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a couple books just in this last year about there was one book called The Narcissism Epidemic by a couple of psychologists. And there's another book, it's by Drew Pinsky and somebody else, both of them talking about this narcissism epidemic, what you just said, where it's spreading. It's part of the MTV culture. It's everywhere. It's the emulation of the diva-like behavior and the tantrums and all the rest of it, the sex tapes of the sort of dysfunctional celebrity class we have. But we have regular people that they somehow think that this is cool. This is normal. And these people, I know Gene Twenge and Keith Campbell, who wrote one of these books, The Narcissism Epidemic, they gave tests on, there's something called, narcissistic personality disorder, which is a real bad thing. It's in the diagnostic and statistical manual, and it's got a whole symptom picture, and it's not good. You're really out of it if you're falling into this. You're quite dysfunctional. And they tested tens of thousands of people, mostly college students, and they found that 1 out of 4 college students agreed with the majority of the items on this standard measure of narcissistic traits. And when it comes to narcissistic personality disorder, which is the more severe, clinical version of this, they found that 1 in 10 Americans in their 20s and 1 in 16 of all ages has experienced the symptoms of NPD. So they're either there or they're on the edge of it.
That's frightening. And you look at people, though, like Bill Clinton when he was president and what he did with Lewinsky. You look at John Edwards.
I did not have sex relations with that woman.
Yeah,
Lewinsky.
Yeah. You look at John Edwards, who could have ended up our vice president. I mean, he screws up. And to me, too, there's a distinct difference between someone who, could be an elected official who is abusing his job that we put him in for, and then someone like Tiger Woods, who should have simply said, this is between me and my wife, it's none of your business, and left it at that. Now, if his sponsors wanted to dump him, that's their business.
Right.
But, to go on and have a news conference and spill all this, it was nobody's business.
Yeah, my take on Tiger, he did that. I guess his handler said he needs to do that to salvage what he could.
I think he made it worse.
It's hard to say it, because if he didn't do anything, then they'd be saying, he's still hiding and he hasn't come out. The current thing is you have your press conference and you go into rehab and everybody forgets about it. So that's what he's just trying to get back to his career. And hopefully he's sincerely trying to save his family. I believe he is still together with his wife. And, I wish him the best.
Well, he missed his cut on this last golf tournament, played as bad as he's ever played in his life. Let's come right back, David, in just a moment on Coast to Coast. Stay young. Next hour, How Evil Works. We'll take your phone calls with David Kapelian. And when we come right back, let's talk about the dangers of antidepressants, overprescribing. Is it happening to you? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. David, when people are depressed, we give them drugs. I don't know if that's very smart. What do you think?
Well, let's add a phrase to that. We give them drugs that make them want to kill themselves. Every antidepressant sold in the United States of America, whatever formulation, whatever brand, all antidepressants carry a black box warning. This is the most severe warning that the FDA has that says that quote, there's a, quote, risk of suicidal thinking and behavior. And so just on the basic and gut level, if somebody is depressed, why would you give them a drug that might make them want to take their life? That seems a little bit counterintuitive. But it goes way beyond that. I need to say something, a caveat up front, okay? I'm not a doctor. I'm not trying to offend people who are taking these drugs or who have family members who are taking them. I'm not criticizing them. I'm not advising them to go off the drugs. I'm not a doctor. I am a journalist, and I can tell you without any question these drugs are way overprescribed, and a lot of doctors agree with that. That's where I'm coming from. And, there was a Scientific American article last year, it was actually 2008, that said that almost one in 10 Americans are taking these drugs. When I say drugs, I'm talking specifically about SSRI antidepressants. These are, your listeners, I know you've done shows about this before. SSRIs and SNRIs, these are, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and the other one, they basically elevate the levels of neurotransmitters in the brain, serotonin and or norepinephrine. And what they do is they're monkeying around with the levels of these substances in your brain to artificially elevate your mood. That's what they do. That's what they claim to do. And, this already has a little bit of a mad scientist feel to it because, here's somebody who's depressed, angry, has rage problems, all kinds of mental, emotional problems. And we are, instead of, helping them to understand what's going on in their life and maybe find, through counseling, some understanding and forgiveness and healing, we go toward drugs. Now, look, George, the whole argument, is this a genetic brain disease? If you're talking 20 to 30 million American adults taking SSRI antidepressants, okay, which is what Scientific American says, there is absolutely no evidence that 20 to 30 million Americans have organic brain disease, okay? So we're not talking about that. We're talking about people that have emotional problems. They're tangled up in their minds with various problems. They're quite real.
And we all have problems, David. All of us have problems. Your family problems. People have had money problems. The economic mess right now is affecting a lot of people. I've never seen it worse out there with people who are down over things like that. But that doesn't mean you have to go run to some antidepressant to try to fix that.
Yeah, the thing is that there's a change in culture. In the 50s, 60s, I don't know how effective the psychiatrists and psychologists were, but the intent was to try to help troubled people find understanding by talking to them, whatever the philosophy was, to bring out past traumatic experiences and all that stuff. But basically, it was to unscramble them. Okay, now there is a very the whole paradigm today. I don't mean to be too broad brush, but with a great many psychiatrists, psychologists, the whole counseling arts, no understanding needed. Just prescribe a drug on the very first visit. Don't get to know the person. Don't get to know, their family dynamics. Don't get a handle on their inner life, their conflicts, their problems. Just give them a prescription for an antidepressant, and it's so efficient, and they'll send them on their way.
And get that appointment for next week.
Right.
And get him back. Now, I'm sure these antidepressants help some people, don't you?
No doubt.
But generally, maybe not.
I'm sure there are cases where it's just the right thing. I'm absolutely sure of that. They're just they won't come out of the basement. They need something to give them to take the edge off of their highs and lows and to where they can think straight and make some right decisions and make some changes in their life. But the problem is, again, this comes back to what we talked about with the whole issue with the swine flu and the vaccines. There's a lot of money in these drugs. Effexor, I know, is Wyeth that makes that. It's their biggest drug. It's billions of dollars it brings in, with a B.
And if these people weren't prescribed this, they wouldn't be making that kind of money.
Yeah, and you know, it just disturbs me to see commercials on primetime now for antidepressants. Well, it, you know, it used to be, you go to the doctor, doctor, I have a problem. He says, oh, okay, and if he thinks you need a drug, he prescribes you the drug. Why are you advertising to the general public? So the public can say, doctor, I'm depressed. Can you prescribe me some, you know, XYZ antidepressant?
I get a kick out of the taglines in some of those commercials where it's a 20-second tagline that they get in there in 5 seconds that tells you how it will not work for you. You know, if your legs fall off, don't take this pill. I mean,
I know
people don't listen to that.
My teenage son, his favorite one, I forget the product, but there's an asthma medication that one of the side effects is it may kill you from asthma.
Oh. And they say that, right? Write it down real fast.
They have to say it by law, yeah.
You know, but they say it so fast it goes right by you unless you really listen.
Yeah, and they have the music and they have the visual, so you're supposed to basically have, you know, blank out on it, zone out, and not really hear what they're saying.
Tell me how this equates to how evil works, overprescribing and everything else.
It's a good question. I think here's the issue, is that, you know, why do 20 to 30 million Americans think they need these drugs? Okay, something's going on. They're not dealing with, you know, the stresses and problems of life optimally. They're, unless you're going to tell me that you know, half the population has organic brain disease, if we're saying that this is something about that they weren't born this way, but it's something about the way they're reacting to and relating to their family, the stresses of life and work and so forth, then the question is, you know, are we really getting better when we cover up symptoms and we artificially make you feel better with a drug? I question that. Giving the proviso, there are instances where it is needed and it's helpful for a time. I don't think anybody disputes that. But to me, it's a shame of our modern age where we've moved away from realizing that, you know, this is a person, there's a troubled soul, there's a reason for this. I mean, we've almost moved away from reason. You asked a question, you're making me really think about it. You know, there are reasons for things, you know, causes and effects. A causes B, B causes C. When you look at a human being, and what's more important than a human being? Here's somebody who's got a problem. Well, you know, if you misdiagnose any problem, let's say it's just a physical problem, you misdiagnose it and give them the wrong drug, you know, or they need to have the left leg amputated and you cut off the right leg. I mean,
and that's happened too.
Yes, it has happened. And so taking that to this whole issue of, you know, mental illness and depression, and well, I tell you, I read the symptoms of clinical depression, and half the symptoms there sound like half the people I know. I mean, you know, you've lost interest in things. I don't mean to make light of it. I know in extreme cases it really does hobble people's life. But the fact is, normality is not like we have people that are normal and there are people that are like bonkers and mentally ill. It's what you have is a continuum from like totally whole, happy people, conflict-free, to people that are like off the edge where they're like criminally insane. You have every degree in there, okay? And we can't just take everybody who's got any symptom and put them on drugs. We're a drug-taking society. A lot of us take it, you know, legally, and some of us take it illegally, but we're all, you know, medicating our pain away. And I say, you know, I don't think that's the ideal way to deal with these problems. I don't think we're really understanding ourselves. I don't think we're really helping ourselves.
And so, you know what? Indirectly, maybe even directly in some cases, we're getting it in our drinking water. We can't get away from it, David.
Yeah, there have been studies that show that you're even poisoning fish with the urinary byproduct of these drugs. They go into the waterways and the fish. I got right in the book. I say you're talking about a lot of drugs, and you're talking about, you know, poisoned fish.
Absolutely, you really are.
You know, even our soldiers, we have taken to. It's a stressful thing to be in at war, okay? But we have put a high percentage of people. We have something like 20,000 soldiers, according to Time magazine article, in the Iraqi and Afghan theaters that are on these drugs. You have half of them on antidepressants, half of them on sleep aids like Ambien. And the problem is, there's a lot of suicide because. There's a reason there's a black box warning on these drugs, because some people do commit suicide. Well, guess what? That's mostly in the age group of the military, which is like, you know, 18 through 24. And so there have been a high, you know, statistically high number of suicides in Iraq and Afghanistan, and 40% of those people were on these antidepressant drugs. So this is a sad thing. My wife, who used to be a registered pharmacist, told me in pharmacy school that they teach you drug X, let's say, has, you know, 21 known effects, okay? And the effect that they want to sell, they call the effect. And the other 20 effects, they call the side effects. But these are all effects. And so there's, you know, it may be doing something that you like, but there's a price to pay, like you say, on the commercials. You hear all the, you know, your brain may explode, your skin will fall off, your, you know, there's always a price to pay when you're taking these powerful drugs.
And isn't it true that most of these kids that have gone berserk in schools, that have done these shootings, have been on some kind of pharmaceutical drug?
Yeah, this is a very underreported story, George. I've written about it over the years. So there's one guy at Fox News I know that has picked it up. But for the most part, it's just like the Scientologists that complain about psychiatric drugs. And I'm not a Scientologist, and I don't really know what they're about. But this is quite real. In fact, in the chapter Doctors, Drugs, and Demons in How Evil Works, I go through and I list, here it is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, 10 or 12 of the most famous, I'm talking like, Patrick Purdy and the Stockton, California, that's when they wanted to ban assault rifles after that, all the way up to like John Hinckley, who shot the president. But I give the most famous cases. All these people were either on these psychiatric drugs or just coming off them, which is a very notoriously unstable and dangerous time.
In both ways, going on and coming off, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, the argument is, well, you know, these people were crazy and they would have snapped anyway. And that is a fair question. And the answer is yes, in some cases, they probably would, because we've had crazy mass murderers long before we had, you know, psychiatric drugs. But the fact is that if you look at the internal studies that are done, you know, the clinical trials that the drug manufacturers do, you look at the lawsuits that have come out of these cases when somebody does go off and shoots his family members from after taking antidepressants, and you just look at the medical research, peer-reviewed studies, the black box warning labels, there's no question that in some instances these drugs do take people that are living on the edge of sanity and push them over the edge. There's just no question about that.
Your chapter on false gods fascinated me. Let's take a few minutes while we can before we get to phone calls next hour.
Sure.
About that chapter, false gods, and tell me about that.
Well, false gods, that's the one about like paganism, New Age movement, and so forth.
Witchcraft.
Yeah. You know, if you read it, I'm not like terribly down and saying, oh, these people are all like, you know, satanic. What I'm saying is that there is a, you know, America used to be pretty much a Judeo-Christian country, like, you know, 60 years ago, World War II generation. It was a church-going country. That has changed a lot. In lots of ways, we're a post-Christian country. And I think that people are inherently kind of religious in the sense that they're looking for something beyond themselves, something to give life meaning, something that transcends just their existence. I think most people and psychologists would agree with that. There's that impulse for that. So what happened is the heavy demonization of Christianity, and where it's just not as universal as it once was in this country, has created a vacuum. And into that vacuum, you have a lot of other beliefs. You have, as I said, the New Age and pagan beliefs that have really come to the have grown a lot. Wicca, especially among women, it's very popular. It's very strong in the feminist movement. And I also have a chapter on atheism, which we've always had atheists, but the whole militancy of atheists, the hardcore, the manifestos, you know, the God is not great, the God delusion, best-selling books, and so forth. That's a new thing, and that's all come into this sort of vacuum that's been created by the dethroning of the national religion of we'll say the Judeo-Christian ethic of previous generations.
You know, as you, we were talking about the being the cynic and being the skeptic, people who are agnostic are looking for truth. They're looking to believe. They want proof. They want somebody to convince them,
or
they
want
to be.
Yeah.
They want to be convinced. Atheists, on the other hand, they're not going to believe. There's nothing you can do to get to them.
Yeah, and in a case of someone like Christopher Hitchens, who, by the way, is an excellent reporter. I love his writing, but he's a hardcore atheist. He describes himself as an anti-theist. He does not want there to be a God. He doesn't like the whole idea of there being a God.
Right.
So it's not just that. Yeah, I've looked at the evidence and I don't see it. He is violently against the idea of it. I do have respect for agnostics because it's honest. It's just, I don't know. I'd like to know.
Whatever happened to, after she disappeared, Madeline Murray O'Hare, did they ever find her body or bones or anything? Remember that case a long, long time ago? She was the atheist. That just...
I don't know what happened to her, but I know that her son, Bill, is a strong Christian.
Really?
So she didn't do, he's the head of a whole organization. I can't think of the name of it right now. They try to help with the there's a lot of Christian persecution around the world. It's pretty awful in different countries, and he's involved in trying to help them. But yeah, he's a very hardcore Christian.
Well,
so she didn't do a good job in passing on her atheism to her progeny.
No. somebody did her in, and but it was really never investigated the way it should have been. It was weird. The whole case was weird.
Yeah, I'm a little lightweight on that. I don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about your first book, the best-selling, The Marketing of Evil.
Yeah.
Because that's an offshoot. You know, this is an offshoot of that, How Evil Works. There is no question that strong marketeers understand how to manipulate people. They get to them.
Yeah, you know, George, marketing discovered something about, 50, 60 years ago. There was a book in the 1950s, The Hidden Persuaders by Vance Packard. It was a big best-selling book. And it was all about how the marketers in Madison Avenue was emotionally manipulating people. Before then, you got a washer or dryer. You say, hey, you know, this will work. It gives the features and benefits. It's made out of stainless steel, and it's quiet, and it gives kind of appealing to your reason. And what they realize is that's not how you sell things, okay? You sell things by appealing to people's emotions, their insecurities, their guilt, their unconscious desires, their hang-ups. And there's a whole market research that they did to really, mine the underbelly, the dark side of human nature and all of our guilt and our vulnerabilities, basically, and then attach that to the product. And sometimes it's just as innocent as associating your product with something that makes people feel good. You got the Geico Gecko, the Aflac Duck, the E-Trade Talking Baby. That just kills me. It's just hysterical. I was in the, Donald Duck Orange Juice, anything. That's harmless enough. But when you get into politics, it gets uglier because you associate your opponent with the Nazi bigot, extra X chromosome drooling fanatic, a hater. And you use the same techniques Madison Avenue uses, but to sell agendas, not just products.
We'll come right back, David, and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.